It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 287 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a Kickstarter doubleheader. Please note that both Kickstarter projects conclude Friday, June 30, so time is of the essence. First up is Mike Bloom, creator of a fascinating comic called Italiano. We discuss how he brought the project to be and how he does everything on this book. He's got great plans for it, and he needs your support, so look up Italiano on Kickstarter after you listen to this podcast. Then everything wraps up with Brian L. Hawkins talking about America's Kingdom and his other book, Angelica Reigns. He's the author of that latter book, and they have a Kickstarter going on as well. We discuss how he brought America's Kingdom to be and what kind of things he has in mind as far as storytelling goes and what it might have to do with current events. A word of warning, when I talked with Brian, Skype was having fun that night, so there's a little bit of scratchiness and a little bit of here and there that isn't quite up to usual standards, but if you turn the volume up a little bit, I think you'll get everything that he has to say, and I think what he's got to say is very important, so be sure to listen. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Mike Bloom, creator of a really fascinating comic that is now available on Kickstarter. Well, at least the support is on Kickstarter. How are you doing today, Mike?
Doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you. As I was just talking about before we started to record, I grew up in a town that was next to an Italian town. And so I'm used to people, whenever I hear the word Italiano, I hear Italiano kind of stuff. I'm used to that accent being part of it. So, well, first of all, you're interested in comics. I saw a video. You were on the Candy Air podcast, which are friends of mine, and I really like their podcast. And you were talking with them, and I got an interesting video that I saw on there about how you brought this book together and your love of comics. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I've been a comics fan forever. I mean, I started drawing comics and trying to put together my own little books, my own guys at probably 7 years old or so. So I always liked character creation. So anytime I could get a pencil and doodle, I would always be drawing characters. And eventually I hit something that I liked, which was the first concept sketch of this Mario Italiano character. And from there, it just kind of exploded.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, well, I'm just fascinated as to where the concept comes from. I mean, well, talk a little bit about, we have to get into the book now and talk a little bit about that. I see on the Kickstarter page, which, by the way, you go to Kickstarter and you go Italiano, just like it sounds. And it says, yep. Sopranos meets Adult Swim in this wicked, cool mobster epic that will leave you broken, battered, and laughing out loud. Where did you get the idea to do this kind of stuff? Are you Italian? Is your background Italian?
Yeah. Yeah, my mom's side is Sicilian, Italian and Sicilian, so, you know, I always had that in the family. I always personally loved mobster movies. I just was always fascinated with it for multiple reasons. You know, I liked the character, and they were all so out there, you know, real big stereotypical characters, but cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also could relate a lot to the family stuff that you'd see in there, you know, like the grandma, the big pot of sauce and stuff. That's, like, very real for me, so that was always cool. So I always liked that, you know, but this just so happened to come about from, you know, from a sketch, and that was cool. So, you know, I got this mobster theme that I wanted to work with, but, you know, I wanted to make it different. And so I just kind of started playing on all the things I liked. You know, I was an 80s baby, so I liked action figures and I liked comics, and, you know, I was big into cartoons and stuff. And so I think a lot of my inspiration came out of the stuff that I loved, and I ended up creating this kind of crazy book that meshes the intensely violent themes of these mobster movies that I liked with more of the over-the-top crazy characters, really bold art style, really bright contrasting colors and stuff that you'd expect out of a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And ended up in this weird juxtaposition of a world I created that is kind of crazy, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now talk about Capital City. Is this really in your imagination Capital City, or could this be a real-life Capital City? What's the city made up, or is it just a Capital City we happen to know?
No, it's definitely part imaginative and part based on the U.S. Well, the north side is very cold and kind of like a port town. Mm-hmm. East side very much kind of has a New York feel. Mm-hmm. And that's the traditional Italian gangster style that I've got over there with the Italiano family. North side is ran by this guy named Bino Biggs, who's, real hard and like ex-Soviet. We've got the south side, which is definitely, you know, a dirty south. And mm-hmm. I've got this guy named Stinky Joe Elbow, who's the main villain that runs things down there. Mm-hmm. And then the west side is very much like a Vegas, California vibe. And I've got Jesse the Peach, who's kind of like a Hollywood gangster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that in mind is kind of how I set the stage. I ended up diving really deep into building Capital City because I had made this into a card battle game previously mm-hmm. before I came back to the comic. And in doing so, I had to kind of carve out a path for the player to go through. Mm-hmm. And so I created all these, boiled down into these territories and created all these regions and then all these little bosses for these regions. So at this point, I've got a lot of pieces on the board to play with, and it's becoming a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would imagine, because I was reading someplace where you said it's been like 15 years you've been developing this property.
Yeah, as crazy as it sounds, yes, I think I started building this world when I was in my early 20s, 36 now, and I just never gave up on it. I always liked it. It always kept my interest, and the way I had built it, there was just so many ways for me to go with it that it's just been a lot of fun. So I just always just kept building on the property, knowing I'd do something with it, and finally decided to get serious about it probably about 3-4 years ago, and now here I am.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I noticed, too, before we get into the characters and the setting a little bit. Now, what you're selling, is that it's a 48-page trade paperback?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so you're starting out with 48 pages already. So, as I was reading somewhere, you've got a whole bunch of, I thought you were telling him in 4-issue stories. Is that how, tell me how yeah. this is all set up, because I'm a little interested in how you do that.
Well, I have a hard time keeping to a 20-25 page count. I really do. I like to write better, almost like a sitcom would be written, or even, you know, an adult cartoon, mm-hmm. where there's kind of some closure at the end of each book, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so I have a hard time accomplishing that in 20-25 pages without leaving people completely uninterested or leaving too much of a cliffhanger. So I just decided, just because that's the way I like to read and the way I like to do it, that I would just make 40-plus pages of content each time. So, you know, I'm going to put it in mini trades, you know, thinner trades, and I'm going to do 48 pages, and that's going to be how I unveil each issue. Mm-hmm. So it'll be huge issues like that. And then, you know, if I'm going to do a volume or a binding, I'll do it at 4 mm-hmm. and then do a hardcover binding.
Wow. Wow. So you got the 48 pages done for the first one?
Almost completed, yeah. I went into Kickstarter with probably 75% of it finished. I've been continuing production while the Kickstarters ran for the last 3 weeks. I got a couple pages to ink, and then probably about 30% left to color, and then I just got a letter. So it shouldn't be too much longer here. I probably got about a month's work left.
Wow, because it sounds like you did the whole thing from concept all the way through to providing art to the printer. Are you doing yep. all the whole aspect of it?
Yeah, one-man army, whole
wow.
thing.
Wow. See, I'm always impressed by that because, you know, there are people who are just artists, and there are people who are writers, and there are even people who are letterers and colorists and stuff. But when somebody can pull the whole thing off together like you can, I am just so totally impressed. I mean, have you always been doing that, or is there one aspect of it you prefer above the others? Apparently, it's not. You like the whole thing.
Yeah, I do. I mean, definitely inking is the most tedious for me, mm-hmm. you know? That makes me want to gouge my eyeballs out at times, but, you know, it's like I'm just going over my own lines. What am I doing? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's got to be done. So I just try to find ways to keep it interesting. So what I'll tend to do, because you are going to get stuck in areas, that's for sure, you know? So if I'm having a hard time penciling out a concept for my thumbnails, I'll just move on. Okay, I'm going to go back to some of this inking, and I'll ink for a little bit. And then if I get completely done with line work, you know, I just can't do any more line work, it's going to kill me, mm-hmm. then I'll go and I'll sit down at the computer and I got a Wacom, I'll just color. Mm-hmm. And I treat it more like digital painting. Mm-hmm. I've got a fine art background coming through high school and stuff. I took a lot of art classes. Mm-hmm. So I come at it more of an artist standpoint. I like kind of doing the whole thing. It's fun to do. Mm-hmm. It keeps it interesting, even though it takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But I think I also have a little bit of a controlling hand when it comes to this property. You know, it's like I have a vision for it and I want it to be done that way. And it's very hard for me to give up creative control. And so I just end up doing it myself.
No, which is cool because, you know, as I said, I don't know many people who can do all those things, the whole bit. Everybody always has some aspect that somebody else comes in and helps them with that they just don't want to do. And you're right to go about it and make things happen and kind of take a break if there's something that's a little tedious for you and then come back to it later when you're in the mood.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of always working on something that I want to work on at the time. And I think that helps me. And I think it shows through sometimes in some of the stuff I pull off where I go back to it. I'm like, you know, I can see the passion that I had for it at the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, I should make one notice is that on the Kickstarter page, it says, and if you read the pages, you'll get to understand this. Italiano is not for kids. It contains frequent crude humor, generous amounts of profanity, graphic violence, and all the other appropriate stuff that makes a great adult book. I have never read a mobster book that was for kids, so I'm not surprised at that, to be honest.
Yeah, I always put that out there because at first glance, my art's very bright and it does draw a lot of inspiration from the cartoon genre. So it's easy to catch somebody's eye and not realize real quick what they're actually going to be reading or looking at, you know?
Mm-hmm. But that leads right into the artwork. Why don't we talk a little bit about the art? One of the things I noticed you do with the different families is you give them a different color scheme.
Yeah.
Mario is like largely purple. And the guy from the north is red and black. The gentleman from the west is orange, which is an interesting color choice. And then, of course, you get to Mr. Elbow, and he's green. He's almost a monster, the way that he looks.
Yeah.
So you've got all these varying types going on. Did you draw from different genres, or was it just, did you like these colors, and that's why you used them? How did you decide the colors for the different group?
Well, before I started putting color to this at all, you know, it was mainly black and white. And so what I did was, you know, I created these four bosses that were very different from each other, you know, like I was explaining. So then I just kind of tried to fit the color to the feel of the family. You know, it just came natural that the classic gangster and Mario Italiano just made sense to make their family kind of color coded towards purple, and the dastardly hard-nosed villain up north be red, and the guy living on the west side would be orange, and then green would take the south. So I just thought it'd be cool because it helps with the contrast in the book. It makes things very visually striking, and it was just fun to theme it that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, the characters themselves are kind of fun to... There's a description on the Kickstarter page that I really like. You talk about Mario. It says, Mario is cunning and fierce. Convinced that the system is flawed, he's determined to bring his form of justice to the city he loves. Almost sounds Batman-ish, the way that you write that. He's loved by his people and feared by his enemies. And it's a really cool-looking... I really like it. I have to notice, though, that he's got one eye that's much larger than the other, and he's got a chin that's got like two parts to it and stuff like that. Do you like doing that kind of accentuation or making things a little wilder than normal?
Yeah, I like to take things to the edge, especially with the characters. It's like, that's just one of the ways for me to express the ideas I have. I definitely am not trying to make anything very realistic here. And some people really like that, and some people it's just not for them. So, mm-hmm. You know, like I said, I kind of just came up with what I like to do and almost borderline caricature at times, and that works for me, and I like it, so I'm just trying to find other people that like that too.
Mm-hmm. What's his character like? I mean, if you were to meet him on the street, what would you think he was like?
Well, Mario, he's the anti-hero, and he's very poised and, you know, almost Godfather-esque, and he really does have good intentions, you know, so there, you know, even though on the surface this book is just meant to be a lot of fun and, you know, a lot of eye candy and stuff, I do have some serious plot points behind it that will, if you're willing to delve deeper, you can actually enjoy. But Mario, yeah, he really does care about making the city a better place. He just does it in a fashion that would not be very civilized by any stretch of the imagination. So if he catches somebody out of bounds selling drugs, he's going to piece them apart over the ocean. He's not going to turn them over to the police, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool. That's one of the main themes that we play with throughout the book. So that naturally makes him enemies with the North and the South. who just kind of don't care. They're looking to make money just like gangsters make money.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you brought up the next one I want to talk about was Beano Biggs. As described, it says, Biggs is a ruthless ex-Soviet, interestingly enough, who seized the power of the North by brute force, and he and his band of immigrants are hard as they come, zero morals and a thirst for blood that's out of control. Yikes. And, of course, he's the red one, and yep. He's got blood dripping off of, and you even got an eyeball dripping off of what looks like a... Is that
a mallet?
A mallet. Okay, he's got an eyeball dripping off of there, which is, you know, you have to wonder where that came from. Is he the kind of guy you would avoid on the street if you saw him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's as bad as they come. I just fashioned him to be just horrific. Mm-hmm. So
the opposite of that seems to be Jesse the Peach, which I love that name. I think that's so funny. It's he's the boss of the West Side, a real estate tycoon, a high-rolling casino owner, it says, and young, interestingly, compared to the other ones. Smart and will crush you without lifting a finger. He loves money, power, and throwing parties. Yeah, I don't see the Russian, the ex-Soviet guy doing that. So you've got a very different character. Is this the kind of guy that everybody would like if they met
him? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jesse's a fun-loving guy, you know. Like, he's straight California vibe, and he does a lot of his work behind the scenes, you know, where he's crushing people through real estate deals and things like that. You know, he's got plenty of goons and stuff, and, you know, he's a powerful guy, but he does it in a completely different fashion, more like a new age business type of dude.
So he crushes you, but you like him.
Right. He's crushing your dreams behind you. Wow. But you're having fun when you're in front of him. You know?
Wow, wow. And of course, the other one we get to is Stinky Joe Elbow, and there's no W on the end of elbow.
Right.
What I like is the way you describe him is really quite graphic. Stinky Joe is an inbred piece of filth that represents everything Mario loathes about the city he loves. Blessed with southern charm, rotten teeth, and a healthy dose of crazy, some say his putrid stench has gotten to his brain. And if you look at the picture of him, he's got a great big brain, and there's like pulsating, looks like blood vessels there, and his hair's all over the place. So this guy is absolutely different from all of the others. You know, James the Peach has got perfectly put together hair, and this guy is nothing like that at all. He feels like a cartoon character more than the other ones do to me. This kind of guy probably wouldn't go out on the street very much. He's probably behind the scenes kind of guy.
Yeah, he's fun, man. You know, that whole Elbow family down there is just a bunch of hillbillies, you know, and I'm taking it way over the top comedian style where I'm really, you know, trying to portray this filthy family, you know, where they're all close-knit family, but, you know, they're like just whacked out. So he's a lot of fun. He really is. Most people end up liking him the most, even though he's really disgusting.
Really? And then, is it because he's disgusting that they like him?
I think so, yeah. I think people find that interesting or something, you know?
Wow. Wasn't that interesting? Now, there's one other character we should talk about, and it's Benny Bucciolini. I hope I pronounced that right. Yep. This is the mayor of Capital City. Do you want to talk about this guy?
Yeah, so I knew that, you know, the four families fighting is fun, but, you know, I wanted to add a layer, like most mobster stuff does, where there has to be a layer of some criminal justice system, you know? So Benny heads that up. He heads up something that I call a mob squad, where he is just not seeing what he needs to be done inside the city as far as cleaning up these crime rings happening through the normal channels. So he's going above the law, and he's created this little squad of some of his best cops and some of his dirtiest cops to try to snuff out the crime any way possible. So he becomes another major player who is really anti-organized crime for his own personal reasons. And he starts this squad where he starts blurring the lines of his own morals in the pursuit of shutting down these four families.
Mm-hmm. One thing I like about him is he's chomping on what they used to call a cheroot, a big cigar with lots of smoke going on. And he's got one of those. You know, the terrible thing is he looks almost like a mobster to me, the way that he looks with the stripes and the suit and all that stuff.
Yep.
He almost has a mobster feel himself, and even though he's opposing organized crime, he doesn't look all that different from them. Does he?
Well, that's part of what I'm trying to drive home with that character. You know, his backstory is that his father was in the Italiano family working for Mario's father, and he ended up getting offed within the family, and that kind of tore Benny in half. Mm-hmm. But he is a very Italian background dude, and he ended up running for office and becoming mayor of the city. And now he's seeking his vengeance on these families that tore his apart.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting cast of characters. And, of course, at any time, you know, the four of them might gang up against the mayor. because he's the one trying to stomp them all out. So all that good stuff is going to have a lot of fun. Now, as I looked at the art on the Kickstarter page, I got a huge kick out of it because there's a lot of things going on. And you play with some of the words in it there. Instead of the F word, you use muck a lot, which I think is kind of good to do. And then you get to, let's just say you shouldn't get too attached to some of the minor characters in this book. Because there's and some of the times I don't know if it's a woman or a man, but there's like a green character that comes out with yellow hair, and this other one, the looks like an older father figure, says, "Take the money, I don't want any trouble." But then this person disagrees with that, and we won't be seeing much of that character moving forward. So I got a huge kick out of that, because again, you're doing things way out of the guys with the red hair, his hair is all over, looks like a rooster almost the way you've got him. It's fun to see how you take these people to extremes. And even with green skin and stuff like that, it's funny to see how these things all develop. And of course, their dialogue is hilarious, too. You know, he says, "You give these slick-talking Goombas one lousy dollar, and I'll fix him to shoot you in the face." Is that a man or a woman? Just curious.
They're all men, yeah. They're all men.
Do we see women in this strip very much?
A little bit. You know, there'll be some key characters that are women, but I personally I'm not that good at drawing them. And I don't like making them look as whacked out as these guys. So, okay. I mean, I'll put them in there, but, you know, I'm just not into like getting them all killed off and stuff either. So it's like, it's just much easier for me to do it this way.
So you can put an axe in the middle of a guy's head. That's okay.
Yeah. For some reason that doesn't feel like bad to me.
That's so funny. I'll tell you a quick story, because you know Bruce Timm, who did Batman the Animated Series, he had terrible trouble drawing women. They had to bring in a woman artist to show them how to draw the female character, because they weren't very good at it. They did the male characters very well, and after that they got really good with it. But before that, they were always looking at it like, boy, that just doesn't look right. It doesn't look quite feminine. And so they had to bring in somebody else to teach them that, which is, even somebody as great as Bruce Timm has to learn some stuff about that.
Yeah, so. It's crazy. I can do it, but it's hard for me to do what I would consider my style of drawing female figure and then make it fit into this world. That is something I'm still working on, you know?
Mm-hmm. And every artist has places to go. You're not there yet. You've got time to figure these good things out and make things happen. So you've got a lot of good things. I love the art on the page. I think it's really just wild. It's so out there. And, you know, you don't get much out there art anymore. Everybody's trying to be very realistic and dark. And the one thing you don't see a lot of in your book are shadows. There's lots and lots of color, a variety of colors in there, which I really like, which is unusual in comics. Is that the way you prefer to do it, or did that kind of fit the story?
No, that's just how I do it. You know, I've always been like that, even when I was just painting. I got tons of acrylic paintings laying around that are in that type of palette. I don't know. That's just how I like to express myself through the art. I just really like bright colors. I like bold colors. I like playing with color combinations rather than making the frames very dark. And you're true. If you see my inks, they don't look like very finished inked pages, you know, because I do a lot of that work knowing that I'm going to do the next step anyways. I give myself a good base to go into digital painting with, and then I just fill it in from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about the story. Now, I was reading, you've got how many pages altogether in this whole epic that are going to be done? There's 48 pages in the first. How many altogether when we get through with the story? How many are we going to have?
That's up in the air. You know, I've got it written out, and here's what I did. I basically said, okay, I'm going to write the arc for each of these main five characters. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So I said, okay, this is where we're going to start. This is where we're going to overlap. These are the main events that are going to happen in the full story. And then I fit them all in. So I've got an arc for all these five characters. I could span this thing out for 30, 40 issues if I wanted to.
Wow.
Easily, you know, like I started breaking it up into four issue pieces, and I've got it. So it would make sense without being drawn out, and it'd be fine. But I just don't know how doing this myself, that would just take too long. And it's just, I would feel bad if anybody wanted to follow the series that it would take them that long to get to the end. Mm-hmm. So I would have to figure that out still. Mm-hmm. For now, I'm going to work on the first four issues, which I have written already, mm-hmm. get that out, get that bound in a volume, see where the popularity is at, and then continue to tell the story from there.
Mm-hmm. I love in the description of the story, it says murder, mayhem, and meatballs. We'll set the stage for an explosive 48-page monster of a debut issue. It really looks fascinating. I love the look of it. And I, as far as like the opening, well, it seems like there's fast-paced stuff too. When I was reading through the pages, you will have some dialogue occasionally, like the mayor talks on one of the pages. And that's a little bit. And then we get things start happening like crazy. Cars are screeching through the street and machine guns are going off. And like I said, don't get attached to any of the minor characters because they just ain't along around too very long. There's a great little piece of art that you did. I think is this the wallpaper? You're offering a wallpaper. It's got one guy, looks like a guy with red hair, kind of a ginger guy with a, he's putting an axe into somebody else's head. And then the next thing, well, you see the Dons basically on the right. Is that the poster you're, or the wallpaper you're offering?
I think I'm going to end up giving out a few different wallpapers.
Oh, it's okay.
True. So that one I'll definitely include. And then I'll probably do some other versions too. And then probably just one of the main images too. So I'm gonna try to go overboard on that. You know, everything I promised, I'll try to at least over deliver on a few of these things.
Mm-hmm. Which I like. I like something that gives me more than I expect, and it just looks like great fun to me. Even you know, even the guys holding the fun have this maniacal laugh on their face and stuff like that, which is really great.
Yeah, so. I like to use heavy expression. You know, like I said, I really draw a lot from cartoons, and I would love to see this animated someday. You know, that would be a huge goal for me. So. Try to be very expressive in my everything I draw.
It reminds me a little bit of Invader Zim, which I
really like.
Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah, I mean, I love that as a kid. I love that kind of stuff and the really thick outlines and the really bold colors. That stuff is eaten into my brain. I love it.
No, there's some of the things that you, the backer tears that you have that make me laugh. And one of the things I really loved is every level, there's a graphic. And it uses the word only $5. And when you all go all the way up to the big ones, it's still only $150 and only $350. I was, you know, that sounds very much like a gangster would kind of look. Everything's only that. You know, it's only $5 for this and stuff like that. So I got a huge kick out of it. I love the graphic and even in the little, the different symbols for the different levels, I got a kick out of that. Do you want to talk about how you decided the levels? Because the first one is called Digital Thug, and then the next one is a Made Man. And then you go up to the different levels. You get up higher in the organization, which I think is kind of cute. I really like about that. Was that kind of fun to put those together?
Yeah, it was. It was hard, and it was fun at the same time. You know, with Kickstarter, this is my first one, but I did a lot of research to try to make sure I didn't mess anything up too bad. Mm-hmm. And keep it within the realm of what I could actually produce in the time frame. So obviously, everybody likes, a lot of people like digital. In fact, a lot more people like digital than I realize. I'm a guy who likes to have it in my hand, but I got a lot of digital backers. But then as I went up, I just tried to think of what could I put in here that people might actually like rather than just all the swag that nobody cares about, you know? So, you know, I back a lot of Kickstarters myself, and a lot of times it's like, yeah, that's awesome to get all that stuff, but, you know, I might not ever really want any of that. So, I tried to come up with some cool stuff that was different than the norm and also fit in one package. Mm-hmm. So that was a big focus of mine in the earlier tiers, was that instead of doing 11 by 17 prints, which are obviously very standard, I did smaller prints, increased the value of the stock, put it on holographic stock, which is supposed to be pretty cool, and made them smaller so that they could fit in the cover of the book. I could ship it as a one package and save, obviously, the customer on shipping and, you know, and myself the headache of multiple packages. The only thing that gets up there is when we get into the higher tiers, I do have a cool poster. It's a panoramic poster of this whole city that I put together, and that's pretty cool.
Wow. Now, there's some of the things I really like, and I always get a kick out of these. And if I ever had the money, I'd do these kinds of things. But in the $150 level, which is called the Capital City Extra, one of the big things is your likeness is turned into a background character in issue one. And then you get a print of that page.
Yeah.
I think that's really creative. I think that's a great thing to do. But how are you going to do that if you've already got most of your artwork's almost done?
Well, what I did was I planned out where I would have these, and I left those pages open.
Okay.
So I knew, okay, this is going to be a big two-page, big splash page that's going to span two pages. It's a big car chase. I'll easily be able to fit this many extras here, you know, get with proper real estate. I left open a couple spots on these pages, you know, so I kind of planned exactly where things would go, and then I limited myself. So, like, for instance, those things sold out so fast, I couldn't believe it. Wait, they were gone in like, And you know, of course, I'm like, well, I should put some more up. And I'm like, no, you can't. You've got a limited amount of space. This is going to be working itself. So I left it where it was, and they were gone that quick, you know. So it's just how it went down. Instead of chasing the dough, you know, and just keep adding these tiers, they've been sold out for a long time, and that's just – it is what it is, you know?
Well, there's two other ones I just got to mention just because I find them fun. Though, you work with you to turn a person into a shop owner to be seen in issue 2. And you get the original concept sketch of that. And then that's not available either. And then you got the Capital City Gangster, in which you create your gangster persona with you. And then you get the original concept sketch of your character. See, all that stuff to me just strikes like fun. I think that's just a great way to do it. It's one way to get people invested on more than one level, not just financially, but personally into a story, is to put them in there. And I just think that's really cool. So, I mean, if you become a Capital City Gangster, it doesn't say exactly when you're going to show up in there. Are you going to reserve the right to put that person in when you feel it's you want them to be there?
I'm going to put them all in the second issue.
Okay.
So I've got the one shop owner, I think, does specify issue 2. Because I do have a scene in there where the cops are starting to go into the cities and shake down shop owners and people they think might be involved or at least know somebody involved with the crime families. And so those I'm going to make into custom shops. So it'll be fun. You know, somebody can say, hey, I want to be a mechanic. You know, I just thought that'd be cool or whatever. I want to be a club owner and I'll work with them. You know, they'll give me pictures. I'll work with them, make them into this persona, give them a cool name, put their likeness in there, have the cops come and harass them in issue 2, and they're in the book forever. You know?
Then you're always a character in this book. Until you get killed, of course, that is.
Yes, and I do make that obvious that you might get shot. Could happen.
Well, it's a great fun book. I think the Kickstarter itself is fun. I can't wait to see the book itself. The pages are really dynamic. Your use of panels and things like that. Sometimes you just use like single panels. Otherwise, you've got a very busy page as far as that kind of thing goes. It kind of fits the mood real well. So I think that's really cool, the way that you're doing that. It's not only a great story. It looks like there's great art involved too, which I always enjoy in a comic.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I mean, if you were asking me what I like the most about this whole thing, it's definitely the art. I think I've tuned that to an area that's not been done before to this exact fashion, and that makes me feel good about it, you know?
Now, you're expecting delivery to come of these books in September.
Yeah, I think I've got about, you know, I think by mid-July I should be having this thing all wrapped up, second, third week of July, and then I'll just expedite so that I can get them August and get them shipped out in September.
Cool. Now, as I see on the Kickstarter also, the end of the Kickstarter project is Friday, June 30th at 11:14 p.m. Eastern Time, which is an interesting time. Why did you choose to do it that? Is it because, well, oftentimes they say weekends are not good for Kickstarters. Did you want to get it done before the weekend hit?
Well, what I was going to just do June, but I wanted to launch on May 30th because that was the proper day of the week at the time. So instead of just going May 30th, you know, because it was a 31-day month, I would have ended up on like June 28th that night or something like that. So I was like, nah, I just set a custom end date. And with a custom end date, I think I launched the thing, you know, at 11:14 in the morning, and it just added the 12 hours and made it that date. So I didn't like plan that. I just helped Kickstarter spit it out for me.
Well, they often say weekends are the times when people who run Kickstarter have heart attacks, because that's the days when people don't do nothing because everybody's outside or doing whatever they're going to do on a weekend. So people aren't by the computer as much, and so they don't necessarily do that. So, well, it's a good timing anyway. It worked out really well, I think, as far as that goes.
Yeah, I started on a Tuesday, bought myself a few extra days by going till the Friday. So I kind of stole a couple extra days over the month's period.
Now, this is going to post on the 25th of Sunday, about 11 o'clock Eastern Time. And as we're talking, which is a little before that, you're pretty close to your goal. You're getting there pretty well. You got over 100 backers and some time to go. That's a good place to be in at this point. I'm pretty sure you're going to make your goal, considering all the great stuff you've got here. I think it's going to be really fun. I think for your first Kickstarter, I think you're doing a pretty great job.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, but it's cool when you like it. But I'm just plugging away and keeping my head down, trying not to watch the numbers too much, and doing what I can, you know.
Good luck. People sit there hour refreshing on the computer, trying to say, has anybody donated? Oh no. So it looks like a great book. Now, this is your first comic?
Well, I've been drawing comics forever, Wayne. This is the first one that I felt worthy of an audience. You know, like I've got it to a point that I'm proud and I've got the proper first issue, you know, the proper story to set it up. Mm-hmm. I've got enough in the tank to keep continuing on without having to have a big break to rewrite. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I'm ready now, man.
See, I'd like to see more of this good stuff. And I'm also curious to find out what other things you have in mind. Are there other projects? Of course, this is going to occupy you until this thing is done. You're never going to worry about anything else. But do you have other irons in the fire that we could look forward to?
You know what? I want to do this series for a good number of years. And I think the next thing for me would be to try to get this animated. And I really love to make toys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. I could see toys easy. Oh, man, that'd be easy.
So that would be where I'd want to go. I've been living this thing for so long that I just want to see it all come to life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, it's just so that people know, I've already donated to this. I've pledged to this as this is going. So I'm looking forward to seeing this come true, and I can't wait to see this completed and successfully done. So I think you're doing a terrific job there, Mike. Man, I hope you keep it up, and I can't wait to see this thing come to fruition and to be able to see this good stuff.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it, man.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I'm glad to welcome to the podcast Brian L. Hawkins, one of the creators of a really fascinating comic called America's Kingdom. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing very well. Very well. Thank you for asking.
It's good to talk with you. Now, why don't you give us the basic understanding of what America's Kingdom is about? Because I don't know if everybody knows what your book is dealing with.
All right. So America's Kingdom is a creator-owned project. It's really my first venture into comics, and it's about what if America was never a democracy but a monarchy. So it's modern day America, but it's set in an alternate reality where a descendant of George Washington is king. So instead of Secret Service, you have knights, you have this rebel force for the United Kingdom of America to turn it into a democracy. So it's kind of a flip of what we're in today just by the chance of George Washington, instead of saying, no, I don't want to be king, he said, yes, I do.
So that one thing made a whole change as far as the country was concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So where did the idea come from? I mean, are you a history buff? Where did it come from?
I am a history buff. By trade, I'm an English teacher, but I definitely feel like history fits right into English, as, you know, literature just reflects what the human condition is, which is, you know, and throughout history, we see what humans are. So the actual idea came from, it was an undergrad, and I was driving down West Broad. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, so I was driving down West Broad, and this idea just kind of popped in my head in 2001. What would America look like if it was just, in modern times, it was just war? And then the next question was, what if America was never a democracy? And so I remembered Mr. Suddeth, who was my U.S. history teacher. He actually taught on how George Washington had this opportunity to become king. And everything kind of just built from there.
Mm-hmm. How long has it taken you? I mean, you know, when you got the concept, you said back about 2001, you said?
2001, yeah.
Yeah, so how, you've got the three issues out now. I mean, how long
three
did it take?
Issues.
How long did it take to get to the first issue?
Oh, man. So I began writing it initially as a screenplay. And so I have like six versions of the screenplay. I'm just laying around still. It's in like file cabinets and in compartments and and everything like that just stored away. And so from screenplay to screenplay to screenplay to rewrite to rewrite, I ended up beginning it as a comic, and then it went to a novel, and then it went back to a comic. So it's been a process to get this version to where, you know, and the interesting thing about that is the growth of a person. As I matured, you know, the story matured as well, and it grew with me. So it's in its last phase, and so it became the version that is out now after, let me see, 2012. That's about 11 years, about wow. 11 years.
Wow. So it's obviously a passion project for you, because most comics don't last 11 years in people's imagination.
Yeah, it definitely is. I really want to get the issues out. I've written up to issue 8, and I have it outlined way past there, so...
Hmm. Cool. Now, talk about getting the process going, though, because we have a lot of folks that listen to this that are indie comics creators, and you clearly went through a process going that. You had to write the script, and then you had to... Is Gnosis, it starts with a silent G, G-N-O-S-I-S Comics, is that your company?
Yes.
What is your company?
That is my, what I like to call my indie imprint for my own kind of creative ideas. And so... I'm linked with SFC Comics, and they are producing a title of their own called Angelica Reigns, mm-hmm. in which I've been brought on to be the writer for, and that Kickstarter is happening now. So my indie stuff, that is creator-owned. I try to be as hands-on as possible with that. I'm really big on self-publishing and the indie movement, and I've been fortunate to link up with Marcel, who was supposed to join us, and what he's doing with SFC Comics, which is the imprint of his larger company, and SFC Comics has it's like a superhero, superpowered universe that has not only superheroes and supervillains, but mystical powers, et cetera, et cetera. And the first solo series from there is Angelica Reigns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. We've talked a little bit about getting the process. How did you find the artist for this thing? How did you go through the process of getting the people together as part of your team?
So for America's Kingdom, it really kind of went through phases. I began a process, oh man, with 2012, I met one artist, and we kind of started on the project. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of trailed off, and it was really my first comic book script that I had ever written, mm-hmm. which, of course, I thought it was great, right? Mm-hmm. And so we began the art for that. I actually have a copy of that original America's Kingdom. I think there's only one copy in existence, and I have it.
Oh, wow.
And so what ended up happening was it just didn't go any further. We ended up disbanding, and I started working on this other comic, I'm Mike Watcher, and then I went back to America's Kingdom. And so this form of America's Kingdom, I ended up linking up with Eris Gonzalez, and from there, he and I just meshed very well. And I tweaked some things from the original. I had grown, I had evolved, the story evolved with me. And so it was kind of an easy process. I came across his work on Facebook, and I messaged him, we started talking, we agreed upon things, and it kind of just flowed very well.
Well, that's when you know you've got something, when things start to happen. If it's a struggle,
absolutely.
And you're fighting and fighting and fighting to do it, then it's just never going to work.
So yeah, that's
a great
true.
Thing to do. So how did you find the artist? Was the artist somebody you came across, or was it somebody that... Because a lot of people go through DeviantArt or Facebook or something like that.
No. Honestly, I came across his art by a happen chance. Just, I saw it, I'm like, man, this is really good. Like, I wonder. And from the I wonder phase, it went to, like, let me message him. And from the let me message him, it came to, well, let's figure out how much this is going to cost. And, mm-hmm. and let's... write up some agreements, and it really just flowed very well. And I would have to say that Eris Gonzalez is just exceptional. You know, I love his art, his professionalism, everything about him is great.
Great.
Yeah, there's nothing bad I could ever say.
Now, I was looking out on Comixology, which is where two of your issues are available, and I noticed that the digital release date was December 30, 2015, but I bet you that print copy came before that. Do you remember when number one was first available?
Number one, as far as print, let's see, that was, yes, it was 2014, November, the first time that I had a print version, a completed version of America's Kingdom was in November 2014. Yeah, wow. Some years has passed,
yeah,
for sure.
And, of course, the second issue came out, according to the Comixology, November 16, about it, almost a year later, pretty much.
A year later, yeah. And I've learned so much with the, you know, I mean, the struggles of an indie creator, you know, the managing of the creative teams, the... And on top of that, one thing I've learned and which I'm still working on is, as a creator, you know, you have a bunch of ideas. You just have a bunch of ideas. And the one thing that ends up happening is you try to do all your ideas at once. And you honestly just can't do it. You honestly shouldn't do it. You know, you have to focus. You have to have a business mindset. And as much as that creativity leads to ambition, you have to kind of restrain your ambition and say, let me focus on one thing or two things, and let me excel at those one or two things first. Build a fan base, be interactive with backers, with customers, with people who, you know, invest into what you're doing. And then, you know, creativity is going to be there. So that's really what I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to rein in all my ambitions and just allow time to pass to where I can really put out a really good story, because if there's a fan base, then I can branch out and explore some more stories.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking a little bit before I started to record about the fact that you did a Kickstarter for number 3 and it was successful.
Yes.
So congratulations on that. Not everybody gets a successful Kickstarter these days, unfortunately.
That's true. Thank you very much.
You were saying that you were at a place where you're almost ready to ship stuff out to backers.
Yes, absolutely. I'm very excited that issue 3, as far as art goes, is completely finished. The colors are done. The colors are done by Beat Studios, and they have completely wrapped up the colors. Next week, hopefully, it will be going to the deliverer, and hopefully by that weekend or the following week, I'll be able to send out the digital rewards and send to print, and all the loose ends of like t-shirts and pinups and stuff can go out. So hopefully everyone will have everything going into July. Mm-hmm. That is the plan.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to wrap things up too soon, but is that the end of America's Kingdom? Are you going to be finished with the story when number 3 is done?
Oh, no. Far, far, far from finished. Mm-hmm. From finished. I actually have the artwork for 4 completely done. It just has to be inked and colored. The actual full trade runs through 5. About 1/4 of 5 has been started. The actual plan for America's Kingdom, I have it paced out to be 5 volumes, so we're looking at 45 issues. And I know that's very ambitious, mm-hmm, as any creator, but the story in itself, I've chunked these 5 volumes. So if everything goes well, which in my belief, we create our own path. If everything goes well, then I would love to really crank out 45 issues of America's Kingdom.
Wow.
Terry Moore has cranked out so many issues and so many volumes as a self-pub. I definitely would love to be on that train, if possible.
Wow. Well, that's ambitious, all right. That's a great thing. Not every indie comic makes it to 45 issues, though, but, you know, it sounds like you've got the interest and the energy to do it, so, you know, that's a good thing.
I'm definitely going to try.
Now, why don't we, you've alluded to the story, why don't we dive into the book itself? You've been talking about the fact that there is one moment in history, if it was different, how different the country would be. And I'm always fascinated by these things. What if? You know, that's a big sci-fi thing. So why don't we start right off with the main character of the book? George Washington has said now he wants to be king. And are we in modern times as far as the book goes? Is it in 2017 as far as the comic goes?
Absolutely. It's modern times. So everything that we have now is readily available for them. So it's modern times. The only throwback is that instead of Secret Service, you have knights. And so what has taken place, one of the big plot points is that there, in the last decade of this reality, there's been a gun prohibition. King George X, who is the main character's father, Prince Geoffrey, he began this gun prohibition. And so there's no guns in this United Kingdom of America, America's Kingdom. And so what ends up happening, you know, the knights, they carry swords. Mm-hmm. So there's this medieval feel that's brought into modern times, mm-hmm, where there's no guns, but there's swords. And so one of the biggest things in America, in my opinion, is, you know, the right to bear arms. Mm-hmm. So the right to bear arms has been taken away. Mm-hmm. So that's symbolic of the idea that basically power to a certain extent, you know, that physical, robust power of being able to have a gun in your hand to protect or to defend or whatever has been taken away. And so one of the main things for the feel as if the monarchy has become abusive and tyrannical, one of the biggest things for them is to reintroduce this power and to bring back guns. So that's where issue one jumps off at, where there's a rebel insurgent and, you know, he's found with this gun. And from there, the story just dovetails into exactly, you know, all the nuances and intricacies of what is America's kingdom.
Now, of course, the name of the king at this point is, why is he called Prince Joffrey and not King Joffrey? I'm kind of curious about that.
Right. So the story begins with his father, King George the X, having passed. And so he is the heir to the throne. So he hasn't technically become king, but he is sovereign because he is the only heir. But the father, King George X, made a decree. He set this in motion years before, and this is part of a subplot that will play out eventually. King Joffrey is part of an arranged marriage. And so for him to be coronated as king, he has to marry this one particular person who is the daughter of Lord Alfred Robbins, who is the Duke of California. So the states are set up as minor provinces. And so instead of governors, you have dukes. And so he is supposed to marry the daughter of this one Duke of California. And by him marrying her, is a wedding and coronation all at the same time. So issue one is actually happening on a wedding day where he's supposed to be coronated and become king.
Things don't always go according to plan.
No, they don't.
The first issue doesn't quite go according to plan. And it makes things real interesting. And when I read the book, I come away with a real interesting feeling that you're not necessarily enamored with monarchies, per se.
I'm questioning them. I will have to say that I'm actually, to some degree, I'm questioning the monarchy of democracy, actually. A lot of what Joffrey is kind of a hybrid of what I believe a republic can be and what a monarchy can also be. So he kind of embodies government that has no checks, no balances. But he also embodies, you know, the idea of divine right. So who does that really make you as a person? I mean, to have all this power as a human being, and you are literally the most powerful person on the planet. I mean, he's the king of the free world. In our reality, you know, POTUS is considered to be the leader of the free world. But in America's kingdom, you have someone who is the king of the free world. So that takes it up to another level. Like, who does this person actually become? Because he is literally the ruler and king of the free world.
So you touched on something that was just so funny. Just today, I was thinking about this very subject, about elected officials, shall we say, don't always see themselves as servants. They sometimes see themselves as better than the people who elected them in there. And when I read this book, too, I got that same feeling that, and of course, you've got a cover on the very first issue. He's sitting on the throne. He's looking rather bored by everything that's going on around him, you know, and I got a huge kick of that. And I cannot help but think, I always like the term politics, poly equals many, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of think that sometimes in politics, I wish we could hire people rather than elect, because the election process, I don't think, is quite what we need, because we keep ending up with people I don't think we really want in there. But I'm just kind of fascinated, because I couldn't help but reading your book thinking about these kinds of things, about the fact that, you know, not only in America, and of course I can't help but think about the UK when I'm reading this book too, because there are some similarities between the UK monarchy and the one that's going on in America. And are the two countries even closer in there, or is the fact that they have similar forms of government, does that give them some sort of rivalry in your book?
Well, right now, between the UK and the UK of America, you know, the standing is pretty much exactly the same. They are allies. nothing really has changed except for the fact that the checks and balances are pretty much gone with the United Kingdom of America. They do not have a parliamental, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, they do not have a parliament like the UK has. Like, you know, with in past, you had Churchill, who was the prime minister, and so the sovereign was a figurehead or oversaw certain aspects, but a lot of the politics ran through the prime minister. In America, in America's kingdom specifically, it's not that way at all. You know, that's gone. So you have someone, basically the president has become the actual king. So there's not this secondary place of prime minister to kind of run the politics. The king runs the politics, and the king runs everything. And so with that, the relationship between the UK of Great Britain and the UK of America, you know, they're still allies. The relationship is exactly the same as it would be in this reality. It's just that it's more one-dimensional on America's side because you're dealing with someone who is an absolute sovereign in Prince Geoffrey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I'm not necessarily fond of Prince Geoffrey at this point. He's not quite, he's not quite the nice guy that one would hope for. See, this is another thing that I was thinking about when I was reading this, was the fact that, you know, in the UK, the monarchy is sort of a figurehead. Mm-hmm. You know, they're nice people, kind of. They go out and they shake hands and they do that funny hand wave that they do and stuff like that. But that's really all they're doing. They're not doing really any governing, per se. And yet, in this book, it's very different because Geoffrey is very much the person in charge, and he understands it. The very first thing that happens in the very first book, you get to understand that he feels that he has absolute power because, well, let's just say that just because he's married doesn't mean that he doesn't get to have fun occasionally.
Absolutely.
And when I saw that and I read about that, and of course somebody's trying to advise him that this may not be a smart move, he of course has absolutely no interest in hearing anything about that.
Zero.
And I'm kind of curious, as far as Geoffrey goes through these five issues in the first part, anyway, and you got 45 issues to go. Are we going to see evolution in the character? Because, you know, this is the kind of a person that he's not going to want to change very easily.
He is not. You are absolutely right. And so it's very stark and staunch with him in the very beginning. Like, you know who this guy is in the very beginning. Like, and you are either going to like him, like, man, he's really just this badass dude, or like, no, I do not like this guy at all. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing that happens is through issue two to issue three, you get to see how far, really early on, he's willing to go to secure his sovereignty, because that's what this is about. He hasn't ascended officially, and he's really trying to take hold of what is his. You know, he has daddy issues as well, which will be revealed. He kind of touched on them in issue one. You know, he's not fond of his deceased father, who's left him this kingdom. So he has daddy issues, and so he really jumps into this role of being sovereign, and he's trying to make sure that everyone understands that I am the ruler of this world. I am the ruler of this America's kingdom. And so what ends up happening, though, is there will come a point of a slight softening for him that is actually a surprise to him. And so we'll get to see at least a hint of another side, but we'll see where that goes from there, because he is who he is.
Yes. Oh, yes. Now, of course, you've opened up a couple of doors that I got to poke at a little bit. So the father has died. Was that and maybe you don't want to spoil something like that. Was that a natural death, or
did it was? Oh, well, yes. Okay.
So Geoffrey had nothing to do with this. I've been watching too many murder mysteries. Is what's
going on. No, he had nothing at all. In my mind, he died of cancer. So it was just something that took place, which actually him dying and the reason he died the way, well, I chose cancer because he had time to set something in motion, and what he set in motion is integral to what's actually taking place in issue one and all through issue five.
Well, that'll be interesting. That would be revealed. It sounds like politics rears its ugly head, and of course, no father is going to want to leave his son unfettered. He's going to want to make sure there are reins put on him and kind of things like that.
To yeah.
It feels like.
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
There is one other thing in the book that I really like is that Jeffrey is not the only person with historical ties. And I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say that there are other people whose names we will recognize if we know much about history.
Yes, absolutely.
Are you kind of teaching us some history along the way? Is that what's going on? Because I got to be honest with you, I like the comics best when like they teach us science or they teach us something about, you know, psychology or something like that. Is that kind of what the books is a secondary person? I'm sure the first purpose is to entertain us and to engage us in a story. Is the second purpose to kind of get us a little more interested in history?
I would say so, yes. I'm really big on, and not to take us too far back, but like, so one of the big things for me when I was an undergrad at Virginia Commonwealth was Shakespeare. And I was sitting in a Shakespeare class, actually. Bill Griffin was my professor. And he was just explaining this play, Midsummer Night's Dream. And it really just captured me, and I realized, like, oh my goodness, like, this man, Shakespeare, is writing about the human condition. And since that point, that's been my thing, the human condition. And the human condition, history tells us exactly who we are, and, you know, and what we're capable of, and, you know, good or bad. And so with America's Kingdom, with certain allusions to past events, to past people, I'm trying to point people at the human condition, like what was done in the 16th century, the 17th century, the 18th century, actually it's still done today. Human beings do not change their condition. You know, they can evolve, become better, but who we are, those nuances that make us humans, that's eternal, that's transferable. And so the names like Lafayette, Sir Francis Bacon, you know, which is a play on Sir Francis Bacon, you know, they're all to remind us that the past is very much the present, and there's no escaping that. In all actuality, there's only the present, because everything that we view in the past, no one actually lives in the past. We didn't meet George Washington. He's alive in our minds because we're alive now in the present. So it's kind of this love song towards what is the now and how the now actually affects the past, if that makes sense.
That's very good. Very good. Now, of course, you said issue 3 now, and you've got issue, the artwork for issue 4. Are you going to run a Kickstarter for issue 4?
I am. I am going to run I Am Michael Watcher, which is a horror story. It's a 5-issue horror comic that I'm like 3 issues in, that's completely finished, and I want to get out there like for a print run. I'm going to run a double issue of that hopefully mid-July, and then mid-August I want to hit America's Kingdom 4, and then just kind of just hit a run of America's Kingdom. Do it bi-monthly, 5 then 6, etc., etc.
Which is cool. I like to point out that Kickstarter makes stories like yours available to us.
Right, absolutely.
Because if DC or Marvel didn't pick you up, you know, if it wasn't for Kickstarter, we wouldn't have the opportunity to read your story, in my opinion.
That is absolutely true. You know, it's the 2017 is a great time to be a self-pub or any kind of creator of anything, really, because, you know, you no longer need specific channels. In order to gain audience or to gain customers or to get your product or whatever it is, you know, seen or known. So, yes, absolutely.
I'm a big believer in it. Now, the thing I'm kind of interested in, too, let's say somebody has not gotten America's Kingdom 1 through 3 yet. Now, I mentioned on Comixology they can get digital versions, but not everybody wants a digital version. If they want to get paper copies of America's Kingdom, how do they get that?
Indie Planet. I'm very thankful to Indie Planet. Is, you know, it's something that I only recently, as far as putting my books on, I only recently came across through Kablam, where, so if you want print copies of America's Kingdom 1 and 2, they are available through Indie Planet, and Indie Planet will ship them immediately to you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned another book or two that you were in the process of. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so the great thing about this is, and I actually did a post today on Facebook. I'm so into social media, not for, you know, the there's a huge gossip aspect of social media, but social media is the wherewithal of really interacting with people that you may never interact with. And mm-hmm. it's so cool. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately, with what I've done with America's Kingdom, which I will admit to me, you know, I don't feel like I've done a lot yet. You know, I don't feel like I've done enough. Mm-hmm. I have so much more to do and want to do. I've been able to meet some incredible people. And one of those is Marcel Dupree for his company, Evolution Publishing, which has a imprint, SFC Comics, which is Super Fighters Championship Comics. And so he and I linked up and he reached out to me and he asked me to, well, what actually ended up happening was he had an opening for a short for a book that he was doing, an 8-page short. And he asked if anyone on Facebook was interested. So I actually, you know, I sent him a message. I sent him a pitch for a short about a character that was in-house for his company. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was he read that and that got approved. And I was brought on for the short. And he had done a Kickstarter for Angelica Reigns maybe a few months prior. And it didn't happen for them at that time. And the writer at that time, you know, decided that he was doing his own creator-owned stuff. So he went a different way. So he needed a writer for Angelica Reigns. And so he asked me if I would be interested. And so we're talking magic. We're talking this young woman, Hispanic woman, mm-hmm. who is a magician who has been imbued with dark powers and like cursed from birth and from her mother's womb. And then her mother tries to kill her, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, she tries to live a life of normalcy. But this fate of hers from her dark powers, it keeps finding her. And so, you know, that's the whole pitch of it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely into writing that. I'm a Buffy fan. Mm-hmm. I like the whole magical realm. And I hadn't had an opportunity to write something like that. Mm-hmm. So he presented me the opportunity to write for SFC Comics. Yeah. It's their IP. It's their creation. And they brought me on as the writer for the first issue of Angelica Reigns, The Faith. And so that's actually what's on Kickstarter now. Cool. So I'm really excited about that. And it's an awesome team of Sierra Mirad, Federico Sabatini. You have Andrea Celestini. These gorgeous names that I struggle to pronounce in my American accent.
Join the club.
But they are phenomenal with the artists. Stream what they do, and I'm very grateful to be a part of that. So yeah,
very cool. Now, so this Kickstarter is going on right now. If we want to find that, if we go to kickstarter.com, we put Angelica Reigns in there, it'll take us to it.
Angelica Reigns, yes, it will take you directly there. We are the last time I checked, which was like 20 minutes ago, or right before we began the podcast, we were sitting at 91 backers and we're at 2142, I believe, of a 4,000 goal. So we're kind of tracking towards being funded. And I say we because, you know, they really have brought me on as a writer and just being a part of the team. Mm-hmm. And so as much of it is theirs, they've allowed it to be mine. Mm-hmm. And so it's my first time ever writing for hire or getting a gig writing in comics, which is pretty cool because it's the indie scene, but the indie scene is also beginning to do a lot of what the mainstream does with bringing indie writers in on things. And so I'm really appreciative to be a part of that, you know.
Do you know when the Kickstarter is concluding?
Yes, ends June 30th.
Okay, so we got there's still time to do, and I'm sure we'll make that, and so you'll be looking forward to those good things. Now, you mentioned social media, and you're big into that. Is that the way for us to track what you're doing and keep up with what you're creating? How do we do that?
Yeah, so I'm really active on Facebook, maybe to my shame, maybe, I'm not sure, but so Brian L. Hawkins is my actual page. I have a few, like, fan pages that hit on the creator-owned stuff that I am working on. I have an author's page that kind of leans towards some of the novels that I am attempting to put out there as well. And I have a Twitter and an IG. My Twitter is at Brian L. Hawkins, and my IG is Brian Lewis _ I am. So social media is kind of my thing, I guess.
What's IG? I'm not familiar with that one. Is that Instagram?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I'm used to hearing just Instagram. I didn't know what that was.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, you're doing great stuff. Cool. It's great reading, and I'm looking forward to it. It's such an interesting commentary. You can't help but think about what's going on in the country currently, and this is sort of giving you an opportunity to comment on what's happening now as well as what could be happening. So I kind of think it's a really great idea, and I hope you're really successful with it. I'd like to see this get all 45 issues in there so we get the whole story told.
I definitely appreciate that. The cool thing, though, is that I've actually written it as a novel as well. So the novel actually contains basically the first 5 issues, but it's in a prose format. And that will be available on Amazon, actually, beginning July. And some of the backers from the Kickstarter, issue 3, actually will be receiving that.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting to get those kinds of things. So if you were going to do them in novels, how many novels would it be?
The novel is going to be 3, actually.
3 novels.
So So it's 3 novels and 5 graphic novels.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, good
stuff. Yeah, so it's, ambitious, right?
That's right. Well, you know, hey, you don't get anywhere by not trying. So I think you're off to a good start. And I can't wait to see what other good things you have in store for dear old Prince Joffrey and those people around him.
I definitely appreciate that, yeah. I'm looking forward to actually getting feedback. I do love hearing feedback, good or bad, thoughts on what's going to happen, what might happen, or what they think should have happened. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll encourage people to do that. Go out on Facebook and give Brian feedback and keep it up. I think you're going to do some good stuff, and I can't wait to read it as you continue along.
I definitely appreciate that, and I definitely appreciate your time and just your overall perspective and supporting indie comics and everything. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.